Celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves, Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
Keep yourself safe this winter season. Wear layers to protect yourself from winter's cold. Also keep a hat, scarf, and mittens on hand as essential winter gear. Select footwear appropriate for snow and slush, and be sure to keep extra dry clothing in your vehicle in case you get wet. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio.
Never drink and ride. Alcohol and snowmobiles do not mix. Alcohol slows down your physical and mental reactions, affecting balance, coordination, and most importantly, judgment. It also greatly reduces your risk of hypothermia. Know how prescription drugs affect you before riding. This information is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
Faster Utah empowers teachers, administrators, and other school staff to defend themselves in case of a school shooting. We teach advanced firearms and trauma first aid skills. Graduates of the Faster program pass the same post-qualification shoot as Utah law enforcement. For more information and find out how you can help, go to fasterutah.org.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Put on your helmet, let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
There's nothing quite like the great outdoors. And at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. So whether you're ice fishing, predator hunting, snowshoeing, or winter camping, Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment for your outdoor adventure. So when it's cold outside, that's the time to come and see what's hot inside at Sportsman's Warehouse. Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside.
Your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Camping in the mountains, fishing in a stream. The great outdoors is where you want to be. Western Life. Western Life Radio.
Alex Grover joins us in the garden once again with Utah's Best Gardening. Thank you again for taking a few minutes with us today. Happy New Year to you.
Well, Happy New Year to you. That was going to be my opening thing, is a big Happy New Year. I'd yell it, but I'd probably blow up my cheap mic.
We're glad to have you back again. Last time we had you on the program, we started talking about seed starting, preparing for seed starting, getting the elements together for successful seed starting. Now, last time we talked a little bit about leggy plants. We talked about getting enough light to these plants. Let's talk a little more about light on these plants to give them the best chances they need to be successful, to ensure that these are ready for you when you put them out in the garden.
Now, in the last 20 years, we have had a total grow light revolution. When I was in college, we had a growing room. It was mostly used by the ag people in developing new crops. But we walked into that from just regular building lighting, and we were just all blinded because there's such a difference between the inside and the outside. Now, this is back in the day. This was, I think, tube fluorescent lights they were using. And the funny thing was, is as bright as it seemed to us in the class that was walking through this room, the reality is they could only keep plants like corn, for instance, in there for only about a week because there literally was not enough light. All this energy and all this brightness and us feeling like we needed sunglasses just to walk in this room, and it couldn't provide enough light. That's something to think about. Now, there are grow lights. I use them. I've done lots of things over the years. But if possible, that's all my caveats here. If possible, when you are doing your growing, a good source of natural light right next to a window or a greenhouse space is really preferable, is going to give you the best option for most plants, for most situations of growing. At least a good chunk of natural light is going to be best. If you have a greenhouse situation where you have good day-long sun, you do not need augmented lights. If you have a window, it may be sunny. It may seem just really bright and great and the perfect spot to you, but even then, you still may need some augmented light because you're only getting light through a box in one direction, and that's less than those plants are typically going to be used to.
In fact, just today, I was just browsing a couple things online, and some tomatoes, I was a little surprised. They said they'd need a minimum of 13 hours of daylight from the beginning of seeds. And I knew that in the back of my head, but they actually specifically state that on the description of the plants now. They actually have a calculator for you to determine how much daylight will be at what time of the year before you can even put the plants outside.
When it comes to growing plants and germination especially, but there are other times when this is a factor, you will need a certain amount of light because that triggers germination. And even if it doesn't trigger germination, a lot of times that's needed just to trigger them to say, okay, yeah, it's time for us to really grow now. if you go outside now, for instance, my garden is just chock full of weeds because a lot of stuff sprouted towards the end of the season when I ended up being really busy. And I've got all these plants that are less than an inch high, all these weeds less than an inch high, and they're just waiting for temperatures and or sun time to start growing. When the sun gets longer or when they sense a temperature, they'll say, okay, we're ready. We're going to start growing like, well, weeds, and not before, because they are biologically triggered to do certain things. And with tomatoes and peppers and a lot of these other stuff, they need that daylight time, right? They simply will not develop.
I know there's lots of lights out there, different colors, different color temperatures people could consider could affect how things grow.
Yeah, now, I'm one of the old school guys that just throws light at it and hopes it'll work. I haven't got all the color ranges and the wavelength ranges that everything's supposed to be at. But as a general rule, if you're putting a light on a plant and that color reflects back, you're not going to get growth because the plant's not absorbing that. So if you throw green light at a tomato, the tomato's going to shrug its shoulders and go, yeah, thanks for teasing me. It can't consume it. And when I talk about consuming, I'm talking about eating in a very different way. We're used to getting our calories, our energy from eating with our mouths. We have to remember that plants are eating with their leaves. People talk about soil fertilization as feeding, and I do it sometimes too, but that's a trap because while we are providing important things to the plant, like minerals, not vitamins, by the way. Plants do not uptake vitamins through the roots as a general rule. There's always going to be an exception, so that's a general rule. They're going to pick up that. Their minerals are all going to come from those roots in the soil, but their energy is coming from sunlight. So you can give them all the fertilizer in the world, but if they are not getting sunlight, they are not going to grow. And if you give them a green grow light, they're going to go, eh, yeah, you're starving me, buddy. And so whereas if you have something that's more in the red range or even more in the yellow range, they're going to absorb more light because they're not reflecting red hardly at all. There is some red reflected. That's where you get your nice dark, dark greens from, is there's usually some red involved. But for the most part, they are going to not want those lights that they reflect. So reds, yellows-ish, if you go into the purple and violet, usually they're going to accept those ranges fairly well. And you have to look at it that one color light is not going to get you everything you need with a plant. Now, since I'm the guy that's cheap, I'm the cheap guy, when I'm putting together light, it's not always something I bought that's specifically a grow light. A lot of years, I don't know if we still have any of these old lights, but for a lot of years, I would use plant lights, and I'm doing air quotes here, that they'll sell at the hardware store to put on a single plant. And I would literally line them up four and put them on a board on the wall, and I'd alternate daylight bulbs in them and yellow type bulbs, the more traditional ones, to give a wider color spectrum. Now, this goes to show how old I am because these were incandescent lights, okay? But nowadays, I talked about the revolution in lights when I was talking about the room, but I never got to it, the grow room at college. Nowadays, we use LED lights. And those are really fascinating because you can do so much with them. But it does come at a price, even though LEDs in and of themselves are kind of cheap. The fancy stuff we do for growing are fancy and tend to be expensive and also tend to be used for marijuana production, oddly enough. So I'm kind of flipping through this catalog, and I'm looking to see where they've got their plant lights, and they're not sitting out here, obviously, in the back where they should be. Another day or two, and I will have gone through this with a pen and marked it up I'm sure my high school teachers are much chagrined and would be terrified to give me a textbook again if they saw how I marked a seed catalog. But, okay, there we go. Now, these come with things like cute names on them, and this is part of the reason why I tend to not buy grower-specific stuff. This is a Sunblaster 24-inch LED lamp. You've got a 2-foot lamp, and it is full spectrum, color temperatures. Wow, it comes with a 6-foot power cord with an inline rocker switch. I mean, this is high tech here. It's only $99.
Depends on how many you need.
That $99 was sarcasm. Okay, I can go online and get a wall-mounted LED light. It's not really intended to be, I mean, it's the fixture and the lights in them, and the whole thing is really one unit. It's not really intended to have those lights replaced. But I can get that for half this price, and I get more light.
Over the years, I've been used to using just the fluorescent bulbs, the long ones, and I get a full-spectrum bulb, daylight bulb, and man, I've grown fantastic tomatoes over the years with those.
If you can get a decent grow light at a decent price, but one bulb for $100 that's only 2 foot long, and then they have you spend another $55 on something to hold this bulb, you can go into any hardware store and look for shop lights, and you get a bargain. And again, you can get similar bulbs, similar coloration. Again, you can mix the blue and the yellow lights. You've got nice, really good spectrum without doing a lot of homework for a quarter of what the setup they're trying to sell to you, and get 2 to 4 bulbs, depending on what product you get and how many of them you get. So really, be cautious. If you're a pro grower, that's one thing, right? Because you're going to be going for pro-grade stuff that will continue to work in your environment and all this stuff. But for starting a couple flats of seeds, think about what you're getting, how much you're spending, and whether it's going to be worth it. Because that bulb that you're getting there is not going to last forever, and then you're going to spend another $100 for it. And I can get a lot of light for $100 from another source.
That's where I've been going. You can get them almost at garage sales. Just switch the bulbs out as needed, and they have a lot of life in them. They really do well. The key also is you got to keep them relatively close to the plants, too.
That is an excellent point. I see a lot of people online, oh, I've got this great light set, and they spent money on it, and it's like 2 foot above the plant. They're saying, why isn't it growing? Why isn't it growing? Why isn't it growing? And I know everyone remembers this from physics class, so this is a repeat. High school, junior high school, I think maybe grade school is when I ran into it. I don't know. That was a couple thousand years ago, so I don't remember. So when you move your light a given distance away from the plants, then you only have half the light available. And each increment of that same distance, you have half the amount of light from the increment before. So if you want your plants to get full light, the most value they can get from that light, you want to put that light close enough so it's not touching and no further away. And that was going to give your plants the maximum growing potential, is putting that light so close that it's not touching, but so close that it's almost touching. And if you're not doing that, you're literally wasting your light going to other places in the room. So that light should almost be touching your plant if you really want to have it be effective.
You got to move it all the time because that will continually grow. So you're moving it sometimes multiple times a week.
Yeah, and that is an interesting thing that a lot of people seem to have a really difficult time with on plants, is they just don't understand this concept of them living and not doing what we just tell them to do. People come in when I used to work in a nursery all the time, and they've been on Pinterest or been Googling, we need this plant. Great. It's not available. Surely you can get this, and by the way, I'm on a deadline. No, it's going to take a year, 2 years, 3 years for that plant to become sellable from the point where we started, if we even had access to the basic plant. Even something like an annual flower, we're talking minimum 6 to 8 weeks turnaround from plant to a very small sellable plant. And that's a quick turnaround. A lot of them are not that fast. And you have to take into account, this is a living thing, and it is just simply not going to do it because you want it done. You've got to wait time for it to be ready. And that also has the flip side that if it's growing, you have got to adjust for that growth right now, not tomorrow, right now. And that's a commitment. And a lot of people aren't quite understanding of that. You've got to understand that plant is going to do what it does, and it may not follow the directions and the guidelines in the book or in the catalog. It may do something totally different that year. And you have to be willing and able to adjust on a dime. If that means you go out there twice a day because it's growing like gangbusters and moving your lights up so it doesn't grow into the lights but still gets enough, that's what you do.
That's part of the interaction with the plant. You get to be very familiar with it as you monkey with it every day.
Yeah.
Timing is everything, light is everything, and temperature is everything. Those heat mats make a difference too.
Oh, yeah. I remember I was in college and I'd gotten some ground cherries. And I had put them in the ground the prior year. Not put them in the ground, but put them in pots. And I just couldn't get them to grow. They were miserable. And so I talked to the greenhouse manager and we put them in some flats on a heat table. And those things popped up 13 days, I think it was. This was a while ago, so I may not remember that exact. And not a problem. The only difference really that mattered was having the heat mat because they needed to be just that touch warmer. Now, we had a heat table and it was gas heated with a boiler or something. I forget how it was done. But for homeowners, we'll typically have an electric heat mat. And that will help you a lot in growing certain stuff, especially for more tropical areas, like tomatoes and peppers and a lot of the squashes. Those are all tropical or semi-tropical at least. And so that makes a big difference. And a lot of times you need some extra warmth for root growth. And we forget about it. We look so much at the tops. What do the tops need? Are we giving the spacing? Are we giving them the light? Are we doing this? Are we doing that? We forget that the roots are just as important, if not more important, on a lot of this development. And so, yeah, there are a lot of plants that need warm roots, and those roots will grow more vigorously in many cases if they're warmer than the tops.
Let's take a quick break. Be back in a few minutes. When we return, we'll talk about soil and other elements to ensure greater seed starting success. Stick around. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Mr. Alex Grover with Utah's Best Gardening here on Western Life Radio. Your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities.
Yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woo! Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure. Explore Utah and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
Utah State Parks has a series of 17 snowmobiling complex maps available. These maps have a description of the trail, difficulty rating, mileage, and GPS coordinates. For your copy, download them from www.snowut.com. This message is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
There's nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. So whether you're ice fishing, predator hunting, snowshoeing, or winter camping, Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment for your outdoor adventure. So when it's cold outside, that's the time to come and see what's hot inside. At Sportsman's Warehouse, Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside.
Be safe this winter driving season. Make sure your car is in proper working condition and is stocked with blankets, warm clothing, booster cables, a fire extinguisher, and tools. Also, be sure to include bottled water, high-calorie snacks, a first aid kit, flashlights and batteries, a shovel, and ice scraper. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio.
Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moon rise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov. Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
Put on your helmet. Let's go.
But, Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet, too. Anyone can get hurt. No matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
No matter what's bugging you this summer in your garden, the USU Extension Service Integrated Pest Management Program can help you find solutions. From free fact sheets and books to seminars and updated pest advisories, this website will point you in the right direction. To find these and other free resources, stop at extension.usu.edu/pests.
Did you know drowning is the leading cause of snowmobile fatalities? Always be certain of a safe route before crossing lakes and rivers, and recognize there can be changing conditions under ice due to moving water. Riding on ice can be dangerous. Be wary of pressure ridges, thin ice, and open water, and slow down since turning and stopping is more difficult. When it comes to ice, if you don't know, don't go. Brought to you by the American Council of Snowmobile Associations and the Federal Highway Administration. Visit snowmobileinfo.org.
Back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Welcome back to Western Life Radio. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff, host of this program, and we have Mr. Alex Grover with us with Utah's Best Gardening. What about soil? What are we looking for as far as the growing medium? I know you definitely don't want to get the stuff just out of the garden. You don't want to get a big shovel of that stuff. A lot of times you want to have it sterile.
Let's first of all talk about damping off. Stamping off is a fungal disease. When you have the right temperature with the right humidity, you're going to get fungus growing. Each fungus has got its own temperature and whatnot. And the reason we talk about sterilizing soil is to minimize our chance that we're going to get some of these diseases. Now, I am a little bit of a rebel. Brian, this is going to shock you. You may not be able to handle it. I understand if you hate me after this.
Oh, no.
We focus a lot on sterile soil, but the problem is, especially in an area where we grow plants on a regular basis, those fungal spores are out there. If you go into a greenhouse or a nursery, the only way that they keep those down is once in a while, they're going to close everything down, take all their plants out, seal everything up, and fumigate the heck out of it with a product that will kill just about every living thing, including us. And then when that's dissipated or vented out properly, I'm not licensed for this, by the way. You cannot do this at home. You should not do this at home. You will kill your family, your kids, your dogs, your houseplants, and the neighbors. But that's how they keep things in a nursery. These gases they use will even kill a lot of the spores. Not all of them, but a lot of them. They'll kill seeds. They'll kill just about everything. We don't do that at home. We're not licensed. We can't buy this stuff. If we go into a nursery or a home store and start talking about getting a plant fumigant, they're either going to look at you like you're crazy or tell you that you're crazy and you don't want to do it. So we look at the sterilized soil so that we reduce the amount of these pathogens. And depending on the situation, that may or may not be a benefit. It is not a solid case. This is always going to help you. It's not. Are you going to get better results? Probably. I will say that good, clean soil that's been sterilized does tend to have a better quality because if they're willing to put the money into sterilizing it properly, they're usually going to put some money into some good ingredients. And I think those are probably actually going to be more significant in your success is having good ingredients in a well-balanced soil. And that's actually secondary to having the right conditions so that we're less likely to have those fungal problems in the first place. A plant medium can be full of spores, top to bottom, but if there's not the right growing conditions, those things are going to be inactive until the plant's big enough to actually just not be bothered that much by them. So that was my heresy for the month. Somebody will get mad at me, I'm sure. But if you look back in historically, our ability to really well sterilize things, unless you were rich, is only about 150, maybe 170 years old before we really started having the technology to do it quickly, cheaply, and effectively for the masses. And that's really, in technology, that's quite recent.
What about the drainage? What type of blend are we looking for?
I'm going to talk about something before drainage. When you're starting seeds, you generally want a fine mix, something with really small particles, so those particles will be in contact with the seed. Because the water doesn't just, you don't pour it on and it magically all gravitates towards the seed. When you're watering your plants, they're usually under the ground. They get wet because the soil around them is wet. Now, you can throw a seed in a strainer or a colander. You can't fill a colander with water, but you can totally splatter that seed with water. But as soon as you quit putting water on it, it's all going to drain out, and your seed's going to dry out fairly quickly. And so you have to have that soil to help retain the water next to the seed so the seed has enough time to actually use it properly. So one area where a lot of people fail is they'll get a good soil. They'll get a good soil, and they'll put it in their pot, and then they'll put a seed in there. But the particles are really, really large, so the seed doesn't have a lot of contact with them, and then it doesn't grow. And so that one gets a lot of people. That one gets a lot of people. You need to have smaller particles. Now, when you go to the store, a lot of these are going to be labeled as seed mixes. They're going to be more pricier than regular potting soil. If you go into a big box store, Lowe's or Home Depot, you may have a hard time finding these because they're just not always what they are looking for in a store like that. They're looking for big pallets of stuff, big sales. And in reality, you don't need a lot of soil, so you're not looking at a lot of return. Whereas if you're filling a big pot for a house plant, you're using a lot of soil. A flat isn't going to take that much soil, and a flat is a lot of plants when you think about it. So you may struggle to find that, in which case you have to go through and say, well, this looks like it's got more fine particles. I'm going to use this for my seed mix. I've done other things. You can do it with a coarser soil, but it is harder and it's more of a hassle, and you'll find a better experience if you can get that finer mix. And it's worth taking time to look for it, because when those seeds are starting, that is really important.
Some of the big boxes I've seen Miracle-Gro, they have a propagation mix or a seed starting mix, I think is what they call it. You have to shop early, though, because it does sell out if you are trying to buy it when everybody else is.
That's funny, because I haven't seen Miracle-Gro with a propagation mix yet. I might have just not been looking for it that day when they had it. I don't know, but propagation mix, seeding mixes, those are good. Now, I'm going to go on and say potting soil is one of the things, or seed starting mix, where when they say you get what you pay for, that's generally true. I have gotten some cheaper stuff, and it's been full of mineral salts. It's been full of all sorts of gunk. I'm trying to remember. There was one year we got something. Oh, fungus gnats. Oh, yeah. Now, this is an area where sterilization of soil makes a big difference, is fungus gnats. Now, fungus gnats aren't inherently going to kill your plants. They're not eating live plants. They're eating fungus. But, oh, my gosh, if you get them, and I've got houseplants. I see fungus gnats. I have not figured out what plants they're coming from. That's not a problem. But if you have a soil that is just full of eggs for fungus gnats, you'll regret it. And that's okay outside, because outside it's got predators and it's got systems to balance things out. But getting a more expensive soil just to get rid of the fungus gnats alone is worth it. In our area, I have to say Miracle-Gro does kick out one of the better products on a lot of different levels for what they have. There are other mixes that are good. When I was in Georgia, we used Fafford at one of the companies I worked there. You cannot get it in Utah, but oh, that was a really nice mix. And as you go up in quality, you also go up in your built-in drainage. If you buy a really cheap dirt, it is just going to be whatever they put into it. They're not going to be thinking about the drainage. They're not going to be thinking about nutrient profile. They're not going to be thinking about what's best for the plant to grow. They're just selling dirt. And the quality control is not great on those. The insect fungus gnats are not going to be great in those. So you're going to get a lot of them. And we found this out through a lot of years of my wife's house plants. Just don't go cheap. Even if I have something sitting out in the garage for 5 years, it's been wetted a couple times, it's still going to be better than a cheap soil that we buy at any store, garden store, big box store, local nursery. The cheap stuff just is cheap. And so as you go up in quality, you're also going to go up in drainage ability. Now, if you go look at a bag of a reasonably good growing soil, and that's how I said that, growing soil, you're going to have either gold-colored chunks or white-colored chunks. The gold is vermiculite. The white is perlite. Now, when you can see them that visible, that's usually a mix. It's going to be a bit on the large side for starting small seeds. Anything tomato seed or smaller, because those big chunks are put in there for drainage, and they're big enough that they start interfering with the ability for the plant to properly connect with the soil. If you get a really good soil, they're going to have a lot of organic material in them. This is usually forest byproducts. So they'll go out and at the point where they've got a tree farm for paper pulp, these are some of the products they take. They take all those branches off of the trees that are going in for paper pulp, and they will grind these up and they'll put it into soil. They'll put it into soil mix after they grind it up. And sometimes they'll compost it beforehand, sometimes they won't. And so with a good soil, you're going to have those products composted. You might get other kinds of green waste. That's what we call in the industry is green waste. That's not a bad thing. And a lot of times people will just freak out. But all these good mixes have something that fills that niche. And what else do you call it? Forest byproducts. You can call it green waste. You can call it whatever you want. But especially if it's been composted, these are essentially the same. And they're essentially a good product. The only thing you have to worry about then is, has it got the right granular size? And have they sterilized it so your fungus gnats aren't in there? Again, I don't worry as much about the actual fungus itself, because that's all going to depend on how your growing conditions, whether you're actually going to use that fungus to do anything that matters to you. So you want those wood products. You want a certain amount of those vermiculite or perlite, which are minerals. They're puffed minerals, so they have a lot of pores, a lot of micro holes in them to hold water. And then you want it to be the right grain size, and then that starts getting to where you're starting to get good soil with this kind of stuff. And again, there's a lot of different ways of making it. There's different products. A lot of people, old school people, want peat moss in theirs. I don't like peat moss because it's mined. It's a limited resource. I would rather have my forest byproducts, even if people just think it's the worst thing in the world, because it's a renewable resource, where peat isn't. Once peat's gone, it's not going to come back. Not in our lifetime, not in our kids' lifetime, not for thousands of years. And peat can make really great soil, but keep in mind, there's a lot of things that make great soil, a soil mix. And technically speaking, we're not even talking about soil. We're talking about soilless growing media. Yeah, there's a horticultural phrase for you. Soilless growing media. Yeah.
I mean, there is no actual soil in some of these when you're using peat moss and stuff.
And that's actually the intent, because I have done it before. I've taken soil out of the garden. I've grown stuff in it. Okay, you can do it. But it's really, really hard to take a natural product that occupies a natural niche, put it in a pot, and expect it to do things right, because it doesn't. When you take it out of context of being connected with the rest of the soil and everything else around it, it doesn't perform well. So when you're putting your plants in an inherently artificial situation, trying to be a long-haired hippie nature guy to the extreme doesn't work as well as accepting that you've got an artificial growing condition, therefore you should use an artificial soil that actually matches that condition better. And I can get into a lot of really technical nitty-gritty details. I mean, I've already have, of why soil doesn't work well in pots. Again, it will work. I've done it. It can work, and you can get good results. But you're going to have to struggle, and you're going to have to do some stuff, even if you're good at it. And it's like, at the end of the day, it's easier going and cheaper going and buying a good potting soil, a good starting mix, and working from that.
What about fertilizers? When do you start fertilizing these seeds?
When you watch a seed come up, most seeds will stick out two leaves first. Sometimes if it's like, say, a dandelion, you may not see that. One leaf may be smaller than the other by a substantial amount, not always, but sometimes. But most plants are going to put out two leaves. If it's grass, it's going to set out one leaf. Those are the norms. And those first leaves that come out are going to be hooked up to the seed, and they're going to be pulling nutrients from the remnants of the seed. And then as those mature and the next set of leaves come up, that's when the plant is starting to cut its ties with the seed, and that's when it's going to start needing nutrients. So if you're buying a starting mix with a fertilizer in it, it's not going to do any good until those secondary leaves come up. That second set coming up, they're called secondary leaves, amazingly enough.
Or true leaves.
Or true leaves, yeah. Those secondary leaves, when those come out, that's when you need to fertilize. Before that, the plant literally can't use it. So when you're growing, again, in an artificial environment, especially if you're using a liquid fertilizer, you're just simply wasting it before that. Now, if you're growing in the soil, that is, again, different because you're going to have a different reaction of the fertilizer in the soil, and depending on the fertilizer, is it slow release, is it quick? There's so many variables. But the core of it is, if you're growing it in a pot, which, hey, it's January, so we're talking about pots here, you don't need to fertilize until those leaves come up. And honestly, this is one area where I really like liquid fertilization for, is anything growing in a pot or in a grow box or anything like that. That allows me to control the fertilizer on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis and prevent a lot of washout if I'm watering right. So this is an area I really like using the good, again, the Miracle-Gro brand. Let's face it, most of the other companies are about the same stuff on this. That's when I want to start using those, and that's when they're going to be most effective. And I almost never use those full strike. The situation a couple years ago, I'm trying to remember the details, where I actually had to go full strength for some plants because I was just having some real issues with the fertilizer being available. And I realized my soil was so nutrient poor and so able to grab onto the nutrients that I had to put more in than I usually would. Once I hit a certain point, then I could go back to normal. But it was one of those weird situations which happens, which is why people like me get degrees. Is you'd have to go to a soil class to understand the specifics of that one. But most of the time, you could do something half strength in a pot or even less and get good results. You just have to monitor your growth and be very aware of what's happening in your plants and in your soil. And you can go really quite low on the fertilizer.
Good advice here. A lot of these are probably reminders for a lot of folks out there, but they're good reminders. I know I forget things from year to year, every year.
I've complained about the public education system enough in these interviews that I'm still bitter against public schools for not teaching gardening. I just feel like we're not giving our kids the things that they really need. And that is, they need to have an ability to connect with the world around them in a positive way, where we're actually understanding what's going on around us in the world. We don't do that well these days. And I feel like that's really real shame, that we feel that it's important doing all these technology and computers. And if you walk away from computers for 5 years, you're outdated. You're going to be very hard-pressed to get back into the business because you haven't kept up with all the new changes that happened over the last 5 years or less. And each recession that happens, I hear, I spent so long out of computers because I was looking for a job and things were tight. Nobody was hiring. Now they won't hire me because I'm not current. Guys, there are changes in the horticulture field. There are changes in gardening. But the changes I deal with is something that was being taught 50 years ago when I was a boy that's been superseded, and people haven't kept up. But they still manage. They still manage. I mean, tree pruning is a classic example of that. People butcher their trees. They cause a lot of damage to their trees. But they still manage to actually do okay sometimes. Yeah, we've had changes over the last 50 years, but these aren't fast changes. These aren't changes that are going to make you obsolete in 5 years. You should keep up with the changes, but it's not intense. And so it's just one of these things that if you teach people right in high school, then that is something that they can take to their grave, even when changes come and we find out that may not have been the best way. A lot of times it'll still work.
Endure life's trials and live life to the fullest. We have another acoustic campfire concert on the way. Next on Western Life Radio.
Never drink and ride. Alcohol and snowmobiles do not mix. Alcohol slows down your physical and mental reactions, affecting balance, coordination, and most importantly, judgment. It also greatly reduces your risk of hypothermia. Know how prescription drugs affect you before riding. This information is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
I'm Governor Spencer Cox. We live in an incredible state, and this time of year, my family and I, we love to ride. Unfortunately, we've had too many fatalities this year, and while safety equipment is critical, it's not enough. Remember to always be aware of your surroundings and never ride beyond your capabilities. We want to make sure that you make it home safe. And never forget, nobody is invincible.
Endure through life's trials and challenges with music from Mr. Bren Hill. Mr. Bren Hill joins us with more music.
I'm going to re-record this song. It's given me a lot of mileage, but it still has merit today. I play it all the time at funerals and the like, and called the Hill Family Song. We have been saved in these latter days. We have been made to follow His way. And there may be times we might turn in despair, but He is always there. Pain, our love remains, and we will go on. The battle of life, it rages outside, so we face the storm and ready to ride.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.
Be safe this winter driving season. Make sure your car is in proper working condition and is stocked with blankets, warm clothing, booster cables, a fire extinguisher, and tools. Also, be sure to include bottled water, high-calorie snacks, a first aid kit, flashlights and batteries, a shovel, and ice scraper. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio.
It raises our spirits like warm glowing embers with tales. tales of adventure invoked from the past. He's hunting and fishing in marshes and mountains, discovering life in the backcountry wild, exploring the West with its treasures abounding, with the soul of a sportsman and heart of a child. Song of the mountains is calling to me. Wild and free, in the great western wildlands, discover the backcountry dream.
Folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.